Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Thursday, jammed as always, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and right here, FS1. Sham Charania of The Athletic is going to be joining us in about 30 minutes to talk about the latest in the NBA. We're rolling. Baseball's closer. MLS coming back. Dr. Fauci says we'll have no football, but I'm going to be honest with you. We're going to have football. Joy Taylor's joining me. How are you, Joy?
I'm great. How are you?
I am great. There's two words I cringe when I hear people, Sam. Hypocrite and sellout. Everybody. I mean, you dig deep on all of us. We're all hypocrites. Everybody says one thing and does another. Parents did this but don't want their kids to. I mean, if you dig deep enough, none of us are pure. The other one is sellout. Man, you're a sellout. Whenever I hear somebody saying that, go examine their life. Somewhere in their life, they've been a sellout. Like Kevin Durant called Kendrick Perkins a sellout yesterday. Kendrick Perkins played in the NBA for a long time. Good player, not great. And after a while, big guys don't matter anymore in the league, especially if they can't shoot a three. Kendrick's career ends. He becomes a broadcaster. So is Kevin Durant calling him a sellout because he's a player-turned-broadcaster? Well, that's called a career. If you get forced out of the league at 36, what's a dude to do for 50 years? Play golf? It's called a career. Is Barkley and Shaq, are they sellouts? I think it takes certain courage for former players. This is why Peyton Manning doesn't want to be a broadcaster, because he doesn't want to go on the air and criticize people. He don't want to. He knows the blowback. I think it takes courage. It takes courage to be Barkley, courage to be Shaq, and bang on players who are often friends. Barkley acknowledges Michael Jordan won't talk to him anymore. It's not easy being a player into a broadcaster. Every time Greg Jennings criticizes Aaron Rodgers, he gets massive blowback from Packer Nation. So I think Kendrick Perkins, there's a certain level of courage to criticize guys he played with. He knows he's getting blowback. Is Kevin Durant calling Kendrick Perkins a sellout because Perkins is criticizing Kyrie Irving because Perkins believes we should play, which would obviously benefit Kendrick Perkins because he could talk about actual games. But Kendrick's doing fine talking about non-games now. But is that why he's a sellout? Because Kyrie doesn't believe we should play. He believes Black Lives Matter, the movement's far more important than games. Well, I can't criticize Kendrick for that because overwhelmingly, commissioner to star players, everybody thinks the greatest platform for players is playing, not social media. So where's the sellout coming from? But there's two words, hypocrite and sellout. Be very careful using them, because if you dig deep enough, we're all hypocrites on something and we're all sellouts on something. Kevin Durant was an utter sellout, wasn't he? I'm going to look at what sellout means. So a sellout, according to the dictionary, a person who compromises integrity, talent, or the like for money or personal advancement. Why did he go to Golden State? He gave up loyalty. It's much harder to win in Oklahoma City. It's much harder. It's not an attractive place for free agents. I mean, Westbrook is hard to win with, though, his style. When LeBron went to Miami, they hadn't recently won titles. He had to build it. When Shaq came to L.A., it was just, they were building. They didn't even win with Del Harris. It took Phil Jackson. Steph and the Warriors had won without KD. He took the easiest route. I'm going to join a championship team and a Hall of Fame point guard and the best backcourt, shooting backcourt in the history of the league. Really is. I'm going to join them because it's easier to win championships here. Is that not the definition of sellout? Wasn't that the knock the old school guys said on Kevin Durant joining the Warriors? Dude, you're kind of a sellout. Be very careful. I hear this all the time in comedy. Dave Chappelle is not a sellout. He walked away from $50 million. Yes, he did. And then he walked into $20 million in Netflix special. He sold out. I think is what you'd call that, walking in to the biggest paycheck available for comedy, which he should because he's really funny. Taylor Swift, sellout. She was in country and then she's in pop. She had a number one hit in country at 19. She won at 19. She had a number one hit at 20, 21. How long is she supposed to sing about dogs, Ford trucks, and whiskey? She evolved. She's an artist. She grew. I'm 24. Am I going to keep singing about the same stuff? Artists grow, move on. Bands grow, move, evolve, try new stuff. Kevin Durant's the last guy in the league that can call anybody a sellout, and I like him, and I think he's great. But what was the Oklahoma City to Golden State move? It was the definition online, Google it, of sellout. Sacrificing loyalty for an easier path to titles. I defended him. I think that's what artists should do. I think that's what Taylor Swift should do after a number one hit at 19. I think it's what Dave Chappelle should do, highest bidder for his comedic genius. I think it's what Kevin Durant, LeBron, D. Wade should do, highest bidder. Why would I want to work harder and win less? I think it's just smart. But what's not smart is using the word sellout or hypocrite, because you dig deep enough with all of us, and it's there. Beginning, middle, end of our life. We're all sellouts. We're all hypocrites. We're all looking for a certain payoff. It may be love. It may be sex. It may be money. It may be titles. It may be stuff. It may be houses. It may be relationships. We're all looking to elevate. We all should be looking to elevate. Kendrick Perkins got bounced out of the league because he's a big guy who doesn't shoot. And the league, that's not a job in the NBA anymore. And he was old and he couldn't score. What's he supposed to do? I think there's actual courage when broadcasters are former players and have to criticize dudes they played with. It's not easy. You get a ton of heat. And I think his opinions on Kyrie Irving are the overwhelming smart sentiment by everybody. Players playing, Kaepernick kneeling in a stadium, is of your most significance and value. All right, so sometimes, let me segue to football. Sometimes the media thinks it's helping a cause, and it's actually hurting a cause. I've told friends this about the media and Trump. The media thinks it's really getting Trump. And I'm like, I'm not sure. I actually think by attacking him daily, he gains to some people some sympathy. Maybe not me, but to some people. His base, his followers, now hate the media more than they like Trump. And they just may vote for him if the economy turns. And I'm seeing this with the media and Colin Kaepernick. They want him to play. It's a good story. The media always roots for stories. Kaepernick in the NFL is a good story. But are you helping his cause when the coach of the Chargers just says, yeah, I'd consider if we needed a quarterback putting him on a workout list. And as I drove to work this morning, two radio stations, that's their leading story. Not making the team, not getting a tryout. Anthony Lynn, his headlines all over America. Just said this yesterday.
That's something that's probably on the workout list. I haven't spoken with Colin. Not sure if you know where he's at as far as in his career, what he want to do. But Colin definitely fits the style of quarterback for the system that we're going to be running. And I'm very confident and happy with the three quarterbacks that I have. But you know, you can never have too many people waiting on the runway.
He's not taking off. He's just on the tarmac. He didn't even say, I've got two quarterbacks. He said, I like the three I have. And that is headlines and talk radio fodder. Folks, Cap's not viewed as a starter. He's not. He's viewed as a backup. There is no position in the NFL for a celebrity backup. That's why the window, the market for Cam is tiny. Jameis Winston's not a celebrity. You could argue Cam's better than Jameis. I think so. But Cam's a celebrity, and there's not a real position in the NFL for a celebrity backup quarterback. And in fact, let me tell you, the Chargers are one of nine teams I know are not going to go after Kaepernick. There's nine teams in the NFL have really young quarterbacks. They are all in on that quarterback. They don't want any press conference about any quarterback except that guy. The Jets with Darnold, Buffalo Josh Allen, Chargers Herbert, Cincy Joe Burrow, Miami Tua, Washington Dwayne Haskins, Giants Daniel Jones, Denver Drew Lock, Arizona Kyler Murray. Those teams have no interest holding a press conference for the backup of a young quarterback. So just take those nine off the board. Just think about, because I do think there's room for Kaepernick, but just think about the Kaepernick either press conferences or days he would dominate the discussion. Just think about this. So you announce Cap's getting a workout. Okay. I assure you, every reporter in town is going to ask about that. So the Cap getting a workout owns your town for a day. Then, a week later, Cap works out. How'd it look? How'd it look? That's a press conference or a media jam. Then there is, 2 weeks later, the Kaepernick, will he make the team? That's a big deal. Is he going to make the team? There'll be 100 stories written on it. Then there'll be, he makes the team. Now we're four press conferences in. Season hasn't started. Then there'll be, what's his relationship with the quarterback? Does he have a chance to start? That will happen after a while. Then there will be the questions, press conference, or stuff asked about, are you going to put in special packages for him? I mean, he is a special quarterback. Then there will eventually be the, how's he fit in the locker room stuff, human interest story. Then there will be November election. Let's ask Cap about Donald Trump. I'm nine either press conferences in. That's what teams don't want. The best thing for Kaepernick is teams feel they can bring him in. There's a press conference for it. And then you go and talk about the starting quarterback. So I'd take nine teams just out. I mean, the Chargers, they got Justin Herbert, Tua, Joe Burrow, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen. These guys, they haven't even mastered the craft yet. We're not even sure all of them are going to make it yet. You could argue Cleveland and Baker Mayfield's also in this class. I could make it 10 teams. A third of the league's like, no. All the questions about him, the focus on him, the coaching about him. So take a third of the league out. The more the media thinks they're helping Cap, I think they're hurting him. The fact that a coach said, if I needed a quarterback, I'd work him out. Is that a story? Really? Is that for days? Headlines? The media. If Cap's going to make it, it's going to be as a backup. There's probably a spot. But sometimes I think the media whiffs on this. They think they're grooving it for you, and they're actually creating a little bit of a circus. I don't even think Cap, frankly, if he made the team, he wouldn't want all the press conferences. He'd want to make the team, get paid, and play. I don't think Cap is seeking the publicity Cap would garner. There's a spot for him in the league. Let's add context. Right now in his career, he is viewed out of the league for 3.5 years as a backup. You can't have nine press conferences, nine gatherings for a backup. That's not an attractive spot for NFL teams, especially with NFL teams, 10 of them in the NFL with quarterbacks they think could be the franchise, but they're not even sure right now. And that includes the guy I like, Sam Darnold. We're not quite sure yet. Bad year? Maybe I'm wrong. Good year for Baker. Maybe I'm wrong again.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
It's good to have you back. I saw a story yesterday about Dak Prescott. I am over talking about his contract. 1 month, 4 weeks from basically this week, you have to sign your players. If not, that's the deadline to sign a franchise player. 4 weeks from, like yesterday. So if you don't, you can't negotiate by rule until the season ends. So Dak and the Cowboys, they're going to get this thing figured out. In a season of a lot of uncertainty, they want certainty with Dak. They're going to sign him. And so I thought to myself, instead of just opinion, let's talk data. Let's take the emotion out of it. Well, his offensive line is good. Jason Garrett wasn't that good. He dealt with Dez. He's a good leader. I want stuff I can quantify. So four things matter to me, but one more than any. Wins should be 50% of it. Why? Well, playoff wins, productivity, and durability, I'll give 16%. All 16%. Wins 50%. Why? You can start and be durable. if you're not winning football games, I'm not giving you a lot of money. The reason I'm going to give Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes money, they win a bunch of games. That's why Aaron Rodgers is rich and Russell Wilson's rich. Well, I'm productive. Again, a lot of guys throw for a lot of yards. Eli threw for a lot of yards. But the last 4 years, the productivity didn't equal wins. I'm not interested. Well, playoff win. You can't get to the playoff without winning. Winning is why guys get rich. It's not just playoff wins. Andy Dalton made a lot of money for a lot of years because he kept getting to the playoffs. Didn't matter if he won. If a quarterback gets to the playoffs, you're going to get paid. So wins is 50% of your salary, and then I'll give an equal benefit to playoff wins. And let's be honest. You're playing the best teams and the best coaches. Bill Parcells has struggled in the playoffs. Bill Belichick just got bounced out. Andy Reid for years struggled in the playoffs. I'm not going to crush you. I mean, Jared Goff, I'd pay. He wins games. Playoff wins? Peyton Manning for a decade struggled to win in the playoffs, but he won. So wins is half of what I'm paying you for. Then three categories. Are you there? Durability. Are you productive? And do you win in the playoffs 16% each? So where does Dak rank? So wins, he's 10th. Now he did minimum number of starts. He is 10th in the NFL in winning percentage last 4 years. Playoff wins, he's tied for 13th. I'm not going to crush him for that. Maybe Jason Garrett's not as good as the coaches he's lost to. Productivity, he's 13th. But again, I can't crush a guy. What if you have a great running back? Oh, they do. So they run the football first. I can't say I'm going to be punitively against you because they drafted Zeke. Availability, it matters. He's tied for first. But if you missed a game or two every year and you were Patrick Mahomes, I would still pay you. So now, those are his ranks. Okay. So if you add them all together, his official rank with those four is 9.5. He should be paid somewhere between the 9th and 10th highest paid quarterback in the league. And he should be paid $29.5 million. And that quarterback is Ryan Tannehill. Isn't that a pretty decent comp? I mean, Ryan's talented. Ryan got to the AFC Championship. Tannehill wins some games, but we don't think he's a special arm or a special athlete. But he's way above average as an athlete, and he makes a lot of good throws, but really both need a strong running game and protection to be special. So $29.5 million. So if you're wondering why the Cowboys are taking a while, they probably have similar metrics, which is telling you that's his value. So are we going to go $37 million? This is why it's difficult. Because he's obviously going to get more than $29.5 million. But if you took out the opinion and just went wins are half of it, productivity, playoff wins, durability, each get a little over 15%, it's about where he ranks. And that's why these contract negotiations are taking a while.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Sham Charania is a great young NBA reporter, senior NBA insider for The Athletic and Stadium. He has been breaking all sorts of stories over the last month. He is joining us now via the Coward Global Satellite Network, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. All right, so Kevin Durant called Kendrick Perkins a sellout for criticizing Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is, we shouldn't play the season. So you talk to players. There's hundreds of them on calls. How many players do you believe, and I'm sure it's substantial, agree with Kyrie in that even though the platform is greater to play, it's not the right time to play?
I mean, Colin, you had at least 85 players at one point on that call on Friday that were at least considering sitting out because of the same reasons as Kyrie Irving. They wanted to hear from him, his voice, hear from other star players. You know, on that call Friday, as I reported, you had Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, Joel Embiid. You had a lot of big name players, and there were at least 85 guys that were at least enchanted by Kyrie Irving's words and his movement to the point where they want to get on that call. And at the end of the day, Colin, the NBA, Adam Silver, the NBPA has made it clear it's on each individual player to make his own decision. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion. So Who am I? Who are you? Who is anyone to judge the way Kyrie Irving wants to feel about social justice, social reform? And that's how that's the NBA's approach. There won't be a penalty. All players are expected to be given a June 24 deadline to give their decision to teams. And my sense is that there is a majority of players that do want to play. There's a faction of guys that feel just like Kyrie. You know, you have Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, players like that that are also part of this so-called movement. Then you'll have another group of players that will potentially sit out just based on what's going on in the country, as well as the coronavirus pandemic and their own personal lives. You know, I know a couple of players that are dealing with family illnesses, and they're going to have to deal with that and have to figure out whether we play or not.
Yeah, let's talk about that. June 24th, you have to announce here pretty quick, I'm out. You probably wouldn't get a ton of pushback from other players, maybe unless you were a star on a great team. Do you see a star or high-level player or two pulling out?
I can't say for a matter of fact, but there are, you know, several notable, you know, high-level rotation players that are at least considering their situation in these next, you know, in the next week to 2 weeks. And listen, at the end of the day, if a star player on a team wants to decide and wants to make his decision before the teams leave to Orlando, which will be July 7 to 9, I'm sure they'll be given that option. But, you know, a lot of players are still trying to get clarity. Like, when is that real last drop dead date that I can make a decision? Will it really be June 24th? But listen, all these guys, they have their own separate decisions to make. I still believe a majority of players do want to play.
Okay, so you broke the story. I looked at your stuff on the facilities and where they're going to play. I mean, it's a big tournament. I mean, it's got a World Cup, indoors World Cup feel to it. From where you see they're playing, how would you describe, there's going to be no fans. I mean, what does it look like to you going forward?
It's going to be, it's a glorified AAU tournament for up to 3.5-4 months for the champion team. And it's restrictive, Colin. It's closed off. The quarantine restrictions are tough because if you do test positive, you're out 10 to 14 days. Chris Paul has said it, I'm told, on NBPA calls. It's basically going to be treated like an injury. And if you leave the campus, the penalties are going to be severe as well. 10 to 14 days of quarantine. You have enhanced nasal swab testing, which, you know, I'm told these players do not want. And so you're going to have those two things and the reduction of salary. So you're going to be penalized if you leave the bubble. And so how much leniency will the NBA give these players once they actually are settled in that environment and actually are in that setting? That's what will be the most interesting to watch.
By the way, LeBron's been fairly quiet for the last 2 weeks. He's done some social media stuff, but we've heard from Kyrie. We've heard from Avery Bradley. We've heard from Dwight Howard. Is LeBron working behind the scenes with Adam Silver? That's my hunch, is that Adam and LeBron understand what would happen to the cap, what would happen to the CBA. If players elected not to go, it could be devastating for the next CBA. We haven't heard a ton from LeBron. What do I take from that?
You can take from that LeBron James wants to play, and he's had his private conversations with Adam Silver, as have other star players in the league. And, you know, he's made his position known, wants to play, and feels like they can use that platform, that setting, to really, you know, thrive and not only use it as far as performance, but use that as a social injustice, you know, platform for them to continue to spread their message. And I'm told the NBA, the players are still trying to figure out a way and multiple ways that they can affect change across the country. And that's the side that LeBron James falls on, is he believes that the players are better suited playing in games and competing.
Now, Adam Silver said a couple of months ago, he said, listen, we're not built for a multi-year pandemic. This is not good for anybody, but it could be really punitive to players. Do you believe if they get through this, that it will absolutely change next season and we'll have a new NBA that starts on Christmas and ends in early August?
I don't think the NBA's goal is for this to be a permanent thing, as much as fans would love for every season to begin on Christmas Day. I do think the NBA wants to knock out an 82-game schedule next season, but the goal at some point is to return back to the old schedule, which obviously, you know, you have games starting in October, finishing up in June. That is what the NBA, I'm told, is hopeful to return to. But I don't know how long it will take. Will it take a month, a year? Will it take 2 years? That is up in the air. But and also the start date for 2020-21 is still up in the air. The players do not want to do December 1. Will they settle on December 25th? These are all questions that remain to be seen.
All right. Shams Charania does a great job for the Athletic in the stadium. Finally, we're going to have a season, right? Like, there's no chance from this point forward there's a pullback. We're going to have an NBA season, right?
So, Colin, this is the analogy I've made. The boat is going. They're going to Orlando. If players want to get off, they can get back in the water and they can go. But this boat is going, and it's going to Orlando. And the NBA, the NBPA have agreed upon these protocols, the health and safety packet, the 113-page packet that I reported on the other day. And that was probably the biggest condition that they had to resolve. And they resolved it. And the 22-team format's resolved. So all systems go. You know, this pandemic has shown me, and I'm sure shown you, Colin, that anything is possible. But barring any unforeseen movement, the NBA, the NBPA are moving forward here.
All right, Shams, great stuff. Great update for us. That's good news. We miss sports. Good talking to you. Thank you so much.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So Carolina Panthers were trying to kind of create some, what do they call it, social engagement yesterday on Twitter. Just get fans. I mean, got no games. Just try to get their fans all worked up. So they went to Twitter, and it was innocent enough. They said, okay, we're going to do who's the all-time GOAT of Carolina? And it was Julius Peppers. It was Steve Smith Jr. And then it was Luke Kuechly. And everybody freaked out. Well, what about Cam? Okay, folks, let me lay this out without opinion. Julius Peppers is fourth all-time in sacks. He's a nine-time Pro Bowler. He's one of the great pass rushers ever. He is a first-ballot Hall of Famer. Luke Kuechly, outside of his rookie year, was a Pro Bowler every year. After his rookie year, he was the best linebacker in football for the next 6 to 7 years. He led the NFL in tackles twice. Steve Smith is eighth all-time in yards. He would get my Hall of Fame vote. So a first ballot Hall of Famer, Julius Peppers, a first or second ballot Hall of Famer, Luke Kuechly, and a guy, Steve Smith Sr., I would vote into the Hall of Fame. The best skill player that the franchise ever had by a mile. Cam Newton's not going to get a Hall of Fame vote. He's not going to get a vote. Cam Newton has a 59% career completion percentage and a passer rating of 86. Lower than Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota, and Jameis Winston, all now backups. There's no market for him. That's not my opinion. There's no market for him currently. There's a market for Andy, Jameis, Marcus. There's not even a market for Cam as a backup. I've never seen a player in my life. Well, he won an MVP. Folks, Justin Morneau of the Twins won an MVP. People have lightning in a bottle years. There's Ken O'Brien. There's Justin Morneau. We've had good players. So-so players have unbelievable years. Brady Anderson once hit 50 home runs out of the blue for the Baltimore Orioles. So-so players have great years. Doesn't mean you're an all-time player. Carolina was just trying to create social engagement. This wasn't a shot at anybody. For the record, Cam's no longer on the franchise. So, you know, maybe they forgot about it. But Julius Peppers, Steve Smith, and Luke Kuechly are Hall of Fame players. I'm not sure any reasonable Hall of Fame voter could give Cam a vote. He was an MVP. Since then, he's 500. It wasn't a shot at anybody. All right. I thought this was good. So yesterday, I saw somebody last night, and I've been saying the entire time, we're going to get baseball. All this stuff is just, remember, Rob Manfred's history. He majored at Cornell in labor negotiations. This stuff's going public because baseball's always had a very tenuous relationship between the league and the owners and the players. Baseball had a strike in the 70s. It had a strike in the 80s. It had a strike in 94. It almost had a strike in 2002. Manfred wasn't around. Every commissioner deals with strikes. So that's why the owners are now just hiring labor lawyers. That's what Rob Manfred is. What do labor lawyers do? You ever see like lawyers on the steps when they get a client? This is outrageous. My client, this claim it. That's what lawyers do. Muddy the waters up. This is outrageous. They leak stuff so it gets out and curries favor with the public. All this stuff with Rob Manfred, all this stuff getting out has all been about getting what the owners want. Now, here's the good news for the players. The owners have now conceded the DH. Both leagues will use it. That's a really good win for the players. That means one more job every team for an actual baseball player. No more pitchers hitting. That's not a small win for the players. That's a great win for the players because they're going to use it now and next negotiation. It's all DHs, which is the way it should be. I mean, you wouldn't have fullbacks in the AFC, no fullbacks in the NFC. Like, we're going to have DH. The second thing the players got yesterday was full prorated salaries. So the players are going to lose 60% of their money, but they're going to get full prorated salaries. It's a huge win for the players. All the owners want is closer to 60 games than 70 because they don't want to play in November. We've all watched baseball in November. It's bad, right? It's really cold. Let me give you the teams that are supposed to be playoff teams in baseball this year. Listen to the cities. New York Yankees, Washington Nationals, Minnesota Twins, Philadelphia Phillies, Chicago Cubs, November. Wind, cold, rain, sleet, snow. Owners just don't want to play baseball. So players, you got the DH. You got the full prorated salaries. You're already losing 60% of your money. Agree. Now, this is where I'm pro-owner. Don't worry about 70 games. Play 60, see Crest out, have a season.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
It is great to have you in. Joy Taylor is joining me. You know what, Joy, I was thinking about this yesterday.
What were you thinking about?
I'm not sure if it's just a guy thing, but I'll speak for men. Men struggle to admit they're wrong. It's why I struggle to watch cable news, either Sean Hannity or Rachel Maddow. Has either of them ever gone on the air and said, yeah, I whiffed on that?
Well, I mean, we have a whole segment on the show where you say you're wrong.
And the reason I have that, it's my highest rated segment every week, is I think I buy credibility with the audience, admitting four or five times, like, I just whiffed on that. Nobody in politics ever just admits, yeah, I just whiffed. I mean, I like Rachel Maddow, but God, she went a year on the Russia thing, you know, Trump thing. It was a whiff. It's okay. It's okay. Sean's been wrong. It's okay. Instead of digging deeper, nobody in politics, no political pundit ever says totally wrong. They just dig deeper. I'm not into that. Like, I don't have any interest digging deeper to prove I'm right, tweaking numbers to prove I'm constantly right. Sometimes I'm wrong. And the other day I was driving home and I thought, God, if I looked at my life, how many mulligans could I take in life? And I started thinking about my life and thinking, oh, God, I'd like a mulligan here. Business, career, family, kid, how many mulligans? And I got to about 15 driving home the other day. I was just thinking, because I was going to go golf and I was thinking about, and I thought, God, if my life had mulligans, how many would I take? Like, ooh, bad decision. Ooh, I wasn't nice there. And just off the top of my head, I got to about 14, 15, and then it got discouraging and I quit because I was like 28 and I had 15. And so it's okay to just acknowledge you're wrong. And that's going to get me into this. That Adam Schein is a talk show host. I see him sometimes on digital stuff, very popular. And he also does some writing for NFL.com. And he wrote, you know, we're getting into the list. We're trying to, you know, let's be honest, we don't have games. So every day I find a list and we just talk about it. And this is my list of the day. I think it's interesting. So he says, let's rank based on my projections for this year, divisions based on quarterback play. And I think he mostly nails it. He said the NFC South has the best quarterbacks. I think it's the best quarterback division I've ever seen. Matt Ryan, Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Brees, Brady. There's no C there. Nobody's going to argue. His second is the NFC West. Kyler Murray, Jared Goff, Jimmy G, Russell Wilson. Nobody's going to argue. Then it's a bunch of, he likes Drew Locke like I do, so he has the AFC West third. But I'm not going to argue. Let's go to the bottom of the list. And this to me is more interesting. And I'm not sure if he intended this to be interesting, but he has the NFC East last with Dak, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, and Dwayne Haskins. So we would all agree Dwayne Haskins' work in progress. We're all going to agree Carson Wentz is really good. We all think Dak deserves a contract. What he's telling you is he thinks Daniel Jones is no good. And in fact, he says, Adam, Shine says, the jury's out. He goes, by the end of the coming season, if you stack all the quarterbacks in the last two divisions, and those would be Josh Allen, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Jared Stidham, Sam Darnold, Dak, Daniel Carson, and Dwayne Haskins, he says Daniel Jones is going to be seventh. Now, so I thought to myself, that doesn't feel right for me. So now let me acknowledge that I was wrong on Daniel Jones. I could not believe he got picked sixth. I watched him at college at Duke. I don't watch a lot of Duke football. But his coach at Duke, David Cutcliffe, is really good. And I thought Daniel Jones was really average. He reminded me a lot of a little bit less talented Alex Smith. He's got good running, straight line speed. Not a great athlete, but a good athlete. You get him on the outside, he can move. He's got a good arm like Alex Smith, not great. And he went to Duke, so I know he has to be smart. I applied there and didn't get in. So he reminded me of Alex Smith. That's not the number six pick in the draft. I like Alex, but I thought to myself, well, he got overdrafted. And Dave Gettleman, to me, I've always been a little, I'm warming, but not very good at a microphone. So I want to throw something out to you on Daniel Jones. Just think about this. So let's look at four things as a rookie. How many games does he start? 12. Completion percentage, 62. Passer rating, 87, almost 88. And 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, 24-12. That's a rookie. Now remember this. Let's add context. That's what a bad O-line and a bad coach, bad. No number one receiver, and Saquon Barkley was hurt a lot. So now come back to me. Now this is something I believe in life, is that if you take out the best and worst of somebody, if you took out Cam Newton's worst season and Cam Newton's MVP season, that's really what he is. If you take out Matt Ryan's MVP season and his rookie season, that's what he really is. Even a realtor, first year you're a realtor, you're building up your clientele, you don't sell any homes. You're a realtor for 15 years. And then 1 year, the economy goes up and you sell an $8 million home, it skews the numbers. So as a realtor, take out your worst year and take out your best year. The remaining 13 years of 15, that's what you are as a realtor. Everybody sells one big home, and everybody has a maybe you got a flu. Maybe you had a death in the family. Maybe you had to quit for a couple of months because of personal reasons. Take out best and worst. So if you look at Daniel Jones' 12 starts, I'm just going to play with one. Take out one stinker, and it's not any stinker. Who is the coach in the NFL? Who's the best coach in football history? Bill Belichick. Who is the coach in NFL history that has destroyed rookie quarterbacks? Bill Belichick. Where's the toughest place to play in the NFL last 15 years? New England. So on a Thursday night short week against the greatest coach ever in Foxborough, rainy cold, he didn't have Saquon Barkley, Evan Ingram, or Sterling Shepard. On a short week in New England against Tom Brady, that defense, Belichick and the Patriots. I'm taking it out. No rookie quarterback could have flourished there. Peyton Manning couldn't have. Brady couldn't have. Russell Wilson couldn't have. He didn't have Barkley, Ingram, Sterling, battle line, bad coach, on the road, short week, Belichick, pressure, television. Take that one out. Now look at Daniel Jones. Rookie year. 11 starts, 63% completion percentage, 91.5 passer rating, 23 touchdowns, 9 picks. Folks, He's a baller. I was wrong. Kid can play. Joe Burrow gets those numbers. All you pom-pom waving fanboys are going to be on my arse all year. Those are grown-up numbers. Bad coach, bad O-line, no number one receiver. Saquon hurt. Ingram out. Take out the New England game. Dude can ball. I was totally wrong. Dude can play. So, Adam Shine, I loved it. It got me through 10 minutes. But I think we have to reevaluate Daniel Jones. I think we got a real player here. I think his arm is stronger than Alex Smith. I think he had a great college coach. And even with Pat Shurmur, who failed as a head coach, take out a stinker. Those are real numbers. Joe Burrow gets those. He will win Rookie of the Year. If Joe Burrow gets those numbers, he will win Rookie of the Year. And I'm not sure the Giants, personnel-wise, are that much better than the Bengals. The Giants are a hell of a lot closer to the Bengals than Cleveland's roster. That's all I know. I'm not even sure if I want to do my next thing. I am so good on that. I mean, seriously, I don't even know what more do you want.
I mean, that is fair though. It's an impossible task to go into New England on Thursday, and I mean, if you have an average game, that's an accomplishment as a rookie against Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be honest. Like whenever you start a new show, take out the first show. You ever notice media critics come out? Well, that show what? You never judge somebody in the first couple shows. Give somebody 6 weeks to have a show, right? Anytime there's like a new sitcom or anything, it's always like, well, the first sitcom. What? Did you ever watch Seinfeld the first year? Did you ever watch Everybody Loves Raymond? They almost took it off the air.
Now, I will say, I do think we're not going to see the full blossom of Daniel Jones until next year, because he is dealing with a new coach and a new coordinator this year. And a pandemic, so they're not going to be able to get in the building as early. So, you know, implementing a new system, we're going to have to give him a little more time. I don't think we're going to see him really flourish until next year.
But what I'm – yes, you're right. But what I'm acknowledging is maybe it's because there's so many good young quarterbacks. Those are really good numbers.
There are still some young quarterbacks that we've got to be a little bit more patient with.
Yeah. If Joe Burrow gets those numbers, he'll win Rookie of the Year.
And I will tell you that you were wrong, and I was right about Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I could. Well, again, I can. It's okay. All I want is Rachel Maddow, Sean Hannity. Like one time.
You have to be able to admit that you're wrong.
Just once. Just like, I whiffed last night. Once.
You should probably make it a habit of admitting that you're wrong, but we could start with once.
We all get mulligans.
Everything starts with one step.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, Jeff Schwartz, brother, is now one of the best offensive linemen in football. Jeff himself played for 8 years in the National Football League. A lot of it for Carolina, and he still lives there. And Jeff Schwartz is now a former NFL offensive lineman joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Lots to talk about. First of all, I want to touch on, this got people all worked up yesterday. I didn't see it until this morning, that Carolina Panthers were trying to have some fun on Twitter, and they named their three greatest players of all time, Luke Kuechly, Steve Smith Sr., and Julius Peppers. I don't think it's a doubt. I mean, these are Hall of Famers to me. Steve Smith is close, but I'd vote him in. And people were outraged that Cam wasn't on it. Was the team taking a shot at Cam? What's your take on this?
No, I don't think so. I think to your point, they put three Hall of Fame guys on there. Julius Peppers is, I think, third or fourth in all-time sacks. Steve Smith was the heart and soul of this team for 10 years. And Luke Kuechly, in a short career, was the best middle linebacker in football for many years. And he'll be a Hall of Famer as well. It's no slight at Cam. The list wasn't most influential Carolina Panthers, which Cam would be easily, probably one for most influential Carolina Panthers. It wasn't who won the most MVPs as a Panther. It just was like, who's the greatest Panther of all time? And those three guys are going to the Hall of Fame with Panther uniforms on. And Cam is a fringe Hall of Fame guy. This is just such a no sport is on right now. We're going to be angry about something on the internet thing. It's no slight to Cam. That's just where Cam would be fourth probably on that list. If you've been Mount Rushmore, Cam's there.
Yeah. Cam, I do believe, will become a starter in the National Football League this year, probably around October with some injuries. I think we're going to have more injuries than usual because we'll have less practice. Kaepernick's interesting. I started my show today saying, Kaepernick, Anthony Lynn just said, you know, I've got three quarterbacks, but, you know, if I didn't, I'd put him on a workout list. That was a topic. And I said to myself, the media wants Cap in, but they're doing Cap a disservice. Nobody wants a celebrity backup. Clearly young franchises, there's about 10 teams in the NFL that have young quarterbacks. They don't want a celebrity backup. You know, the Jets and the Giants and Arizona and Cincinnati and Miami. There's 10 of those teams. Cleveland, Baker. They don't want a celebrity backup, right? We know those teams. But I do think there's a market for Cap. Do you, and where would it be?
Well, I think the thing to consider when we talk about Colin Kaepernick is what kind of contract will he be offered? Does he want to sign that deal? It kind of bothers me sometimes how we talk about him in comparison to Cam Newton, for example. To your point, if someone signs Cam Newton, is to be the starting quarterback for that team. He's not going to the Chargers to be Tyrod Taylor's backup and behind Justin Herbert. If they sign him, it's because they don't think Tyrod is as good, and they think that Herbert's not ready. So Cam is brought in to start. He would sign with New England to start, not be behind Stidham. Colin Kaepernick would be brought in to be a backup. And does Colin Kaepernick want to sign a quarterback deal for a third-string quarterback spot, for a camp arm, right? That's a minimum deal typically, not a lot of money. Now, he might get a better deal because of his previous play in the NFL. I don't know about that. But if you're talking about third-string quarterback, kind of just a guy that can see, you know, we can see what he can do in training camp, he's getting a minimum contract for $700,000. Does he want that with no guarantees whatsoever to come in and compete for a backup job? That's something that I don't know. Now, if you're going to give him a backup job with the 10 teams you mentioned that have kind of struggling starting quarterbacks, he would 1,000% take that job because they could be a starter, easily be a starter if he plays well in training camp. So there's different jobs that Colin Kaepernick might be up for, and I'm not sure he'd want all of them. I think he would definitely take 100% take a good backup quarterback job in a spot where he could start by midway through the season.
Yeah. In that instance, I don't think the team like the Jets would want him to disrupt, if anything, Sam Darnold. So the teams with the best chance to start may likely be the teams that are not interested in the celebrity backup quarterback. He obviously could go to Kansas City and Baltimore tomorrow, sit in the bench, but does he want to do that? I was talking about this yesterday. Obviously, Tom Brady's going to have – he's going to be productive this year. I don't doubt that. But I have a theory on this. Joy and I talked about this. It's very easy to take an intense person like Tom Brady and ask him to relax a little. Tom Coughlin was very intense. The Giants owner said, chill out a little. He did and won two Super Bowls.
Yeah.
It's different to ask laid-back flip-flop guy to be intense, take it up a spot. It's always been easier to go from hard-ass to chill parent than it is to chill parent to pretend that you're really intense. Kids don't buy it. My question about Brady and Bruce Arians is, it's not the football stuff. Can Tom walk into this flip-flop organization, off by five, no history of winning, and demand for 4.5 months total focus and intensity? I'm not sure he can. What say you?
That's a good question because, you know, Tom's going to grind away. He's going to even be more in tune with spending extra time to get everyone on the right page in a new offense to make sure that he can prove everyone wrong this year, especially with less of an offseason to work out with this guy. So will Bruce Arians stay late? But really, this, I think, falls to Byron Leftwich. I don't know about, you know, if Byron Leftwich is a guy that goes home at 7 or not. I know Bruce Arians talks about, you know, guys leaving early or guys leaving, you know, after dinner or going home to dinner with their family. But I think Byron Leftwich, this will fall on him. You know, Tom Brady will call him all night, will text him all night. I think Byron Leftwich is up for it. I really do. I think that this could be a good relationship. You know, Leftwich being younger, having played recently as well, understanding what it takes to win. It falls on him, in my opinion. And if Leftwich can do that, can be the guy that Brady talks to all hours of the day, it can work. Because I think Bruce is intense when he's there, which is important. There is something too, though, that guys, coaches waste a lot of time in the facility, a lot of time. They just come up with CYA reasons to install plays and freak you out about stuff. So I don't really mind the Arians approach, which is like, let's get our work done and do a really good job of doing it and then go home and see your families. Colin, a lot of coaches, you know this, they waste so much time in the facility. They stay there all hours of the day, just making up stuff that doesn't happen on Sundays.
Interesting. So we got into a situation earlier, and my staff, so I said, Joy and I have been having opinions on Dak. And I said, if you took opinions out and you went just with data, there are four things I care about with quarterbacks. Wins, playoff wins, productivity, and availability. Now, wins are the most important because you could be durable and not any good. You could be productive and a loser. I don't blame you for playoff wins because, I mean, let's be honest. In the end, you need the right coach. It's the best coaches, players. So if 50% of why I would pay you big money is, do you win a bunch of games? Can you win the division? And then playoffs production availability is 16.6% evenly. Dak comes out over 4 years to be 10th in wins, 13th in playoff wins, 13th in production, and tied for first in availability.
Yeah.
His rank is 9.5. That means he should be paid between the 9th and 10th quarterback. That current quarterback is Ryan Tannehill at $29.5 million. Is Dak better than Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, he's better than Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill was great for 8 games last season. I do not think Ryan Tannehill is going to be good in Tennessee next year. I think that was a terrible mistake to basically give him either a 1-year deal that pays 2 years or basically a 3-year deal. Off an 8-game, a great 8-game run in one season. I think Dak's much better than Ryan Tannehill. I think that the offense he's going to play in now will accentuate his ability to throw the ball downfield, use his legs a little bit as well. I think the offense at times in previous years have been stale. Not so much last year, but we saw even throughout the year that they kind of got away from what they were good at. Here's the thing about teams and paying quarterbacks. You're kind of stuck. Like, you have to pay the market price for a quarterback. And I know it's been proven that paying quarterbacks doesn't often lead to winning, but Dallas screwed themselves. They should have paid them last year, got this over with. But they waited all this time and didn't do it. I don't feel bad for them now having to pay Dak, but you either pay him or start over again. Do you want to start over again with the roster you have? Probably not. So you pay Dak the money that you should have paid him last year and you move on. I think Dak's just much better than Tannehill. He's younger, a longer proven track record of staying healthy, of being successful, of efficiency. Ryan Tannehill was great last season, but I don't think that's going to continue. There's very rare occurrences in the NFL where a quarterback of Ryan Tannehill's age has a season like he did, and it just continues to play that well the rest of his career.
I admitted earlier today that I missed on Daniel Jones of the Giants. You live by Duke. You're not far away from Duke. Yeah. I watched a handful of games. I saw a little bit. He always reminded me of Alex Smith. Pretty good athlete, pretty good arm, not special. I was wrong, I think. If you take out, of his 12 starts last year, if you take out the short week at Foxborough, no Saquon, no Evan Ingram, no Sterling Shepard. If you take out that game, the only game, his numbers are 23 touchdowns, 9 picks, 63% completion percentage, 91 passer rating. With a bad O-line and a bad coach, you watched more of him in college than I did. You've been known to even bet a college game from time to time. Did I whiff on Daniel Jones? Is he way better than we gave him, I gave him credit for?
So if you look at his rookie season, it parallels a lot with Baker Mayfield, minus the wins, right? They didn't win as much in New York. And the reason why I say it parallels it is you look at the best teams he played, the best passing defenses he played. New England, he didn't play very well. I'm looking at it right now. Minnesota didn't play very well. He didn't play very well against Chicago as well. Those are three top 10 passing teams. He tore up all the bad teams. Philly, Washington, all the teams that didn't have great pass defense. That mirrors exactly what Baker Mayfield did, which he tore up all the bad pass defenses his rookie season, and then he played really well against all the bad ones. So that, to me, parallels with that. So if you think he's going to be really good, then you might be in for a rude awakening in his sophomore season. I do agree that he played with a team that was not very talented and an offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, head coach, who obviously got fired and really hasn't shown to be a great head coach anywhere he's been. I was not high on Daniel Jones. The efficiency numbers aren't very good for Daniel Jones from his rookie season. But I think it's too early to tell either way if he's going to be really bad or really good. He's got a brand new coaching staff, and he's deal with a brand new staff when he can't hang out with, he can't talk to, he can't learn from them right now. He's going to start slow this year. But I think it's way too early to decide whether or not he's going to be good. I lean toward still, I don't think so.
Good stuff, Jeff Schwartz. Good talking to you, bud.